The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I want to play a little clip to you. This is from Ransom 79. You can watch it in its entirety on Virgin Media Television tonight at 9 p.m. But in this scene, the late, great Charlie Bird invites Colin Murphy to work on an investigative... On an investigation with him.
Colin, it was great working with you on the play. I've got a lead on a story that I'd like to cover with you. This one is stranger. It's about a ransom demand on the government that's been kept secret for more than 40 years. A former head of the fraud squad for Goals, Willie McGee, told me the story. He kept it to himself all these years and never shared it. Till now. I'm sending you the documents I have along with my notes. It's from 1979, a formative year for me as a young journalist.
Yeah, that was the late, great Charlie Bird. The aforementioned Colin Murphy is with me in studio, as is the producer of Ransom 79, John Kelleher. John and Colin, thanks a million for coming in to us. Pleasure to see you both. So, Colin, expand on the story here. What exactly was Charlie pitching to you?
So this file landed on Charlie's desk a few years ago. He was well retired at that stage. I think the first thing that really got him was, because Charlie was like the bit between his teeth he wouldn't let go, was that this is a story from 1979 and he'd never heard anything about it. So by definition, this was a scoop. And the Garda file, the first document in the Garda file was a typewritten note, unsigned, undated, and it was a ransom letter. It arrived in the Department of Agriculture in August 1979, a few days after the IRA had blown up Lord Mountbatten and three other people, including two children. So it arrived at an incredibly sensitive time politically in the country. And this anonymous gang was saying, "We have secured isolated foot and mouth disease." This is at a time when the Irish economy was basically the agricultural economy. Mm. And if you don't pay us £5 million, we're going to release it. And to let us know that you've got this, and obviously this is well before email, and they weren't going to give their address, they said, take an ad out in the back of the Irish Times saying, Tom Smith has received your proposal. And so a correspondence started, a kind of cat and mouse game, through the back of the Irish Times. This gang would update their demands and their instructions with an anonymous letter, and the guards posing as the civil servants in the Department of Agriculture would respond through these small ads. And all of this paperwork arrived in Charlie's desk, and he knew the foot and mouth hadn't been released, but he didn't know what else had happened. And he thought, this is a story. And as he started to work on it for a podcast, he started to notice problems with his voice, and they would turn out to be the first signs of what became a motor neuron disease diagnosis.
So to what extent then is this the story of that ransom demand? To what extent is it the story of Charlie Bird investigating it
Both, or maybe in a classic cinematic trope, it's one masquerading as the other. It's very much the story of it's a true crime whodunit. It's a caper movie. It's a heist movie. It's a political thriller. That's the Ransom 79 story. The heart of the story is this is a man who is fighting to keep doing the thing that he loves, the thing that he's always done, the thing that's keeping him alive, even as that becomes impossible.
So, John Kelleher, you know, there's that great idea that everybody's got a book in them, and for some people it's exactly where it should stay. So when a story like this comes across your desk, what is it that makes it stand out, and you think that's a story that deserves to be made into a film?
I think Colin has actually articulated it, the two reasons that it's very, very compelling. The true crime aspect, the political thriller aspect on the one hand, and the fact that a man is dying, a man who was a legend, you know, in his career. And I had the privilege of knowing him for 50 years. I first worked with Charlie Bird when he was like almost in short pants. You know, he was a researcher in RTE back in the day. So he has that as well. The fact that it had Charlie, true crime, and a man who's determined to do this thing before he dies. All of those things. So it metaphorically, it jumped off the desk, no question.
And when you were making it, how challenging was Charlie's the degradation of Charlie's health over the period of the making of this?
I think it would be fair to say that it became more challenging.
Yeah.
Initially, there wasn't any great difficulty because he was extraordinarily strong and fit and incredibly determined. Colin could probably vouch for the fact that things became more difficult as initially his voice obviously went, but then various limbs started to weaken and towards the end, you know, he was still determined to get the story finished. But, you know, it was very difficult for him.
And Colin, tell me a little bit about how you saw Charlie dealing with that. Because he was always very, very honest throughout that whole journey when he was speaking, whether with myself or colleagues here in News Talk, with Pat Kenny, who he would have known well and spoke to many times, about how difficult he found it all. You know, he didn't try and run away from that or kind of play the stiff upper lip. You know, he was honest. This was really, really hard. He found it awful. At the same time, you described him as having the bit between his teeth. You know, he's determined. So how did he balance that?
Yeah, Charlie didn't have a stiff upper lip, which was, I think, quite unusual for somebody of his track record in journalism, where we have this kind of cliche of
you
the
expected
kind of
it, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that was part of his secret. He wore his heart on his sleeve, and that was what people responded to and why people opened up to him. In some ways, I got to a point where I wasn't seeing the illness and I didn't find, or at least I thought I wasn't finding it emotional or difficult dealing with that aspect of it. It was a practical challenge. And we found a language whereby we would need to discuss the practical challenges his condition was posing for our investigation. And that was a way of him discussing in unemotional terms what was actually happening and what he was facing. And then very occasionally, we'd go a little deeper. But you could see, and that worked for me in managing it. But I think also what you see on camera, and I sort of only realised later, is that, you know, it's not that the emotion isn't there, the emotion is being contained. But camera does kind of expose that.
And in terms of the story as well, to what extent do you suspect Charlie was fascinated by this? And you touched on it already, that, you know, it happened at a time that he was out there working, that it was a story he maybe felt on some level, I should have known about this.
Yeah, yeah. There was definitely a bit of that. I think there was a big nostalgia factor for Charlie and a lot of the people we talked to, people like Bertie Ahern, Ray McSharry, Jerry Collins, in going back to a time when actually they were very much, in the classical journalistic sense, adversaries. You know, he was the man throwing questions at them in press conferences, and they could go back, you know, decades later. And even though they were revisiting a time that was of great jeopardy in the history of the state, still, of course, they were all young, they were dynamic, they were full of verve, so I think there was a bit of nostalgia around that. And in fact, this even took Charlie back further, because it took him back in some ways to his days of student activism, because there was this kind of curious overlap between the hardline the lefties in the universities and around Dublin, the militant Republicans, and, you know, and then sometimes the people who are involved in more nefarious stuff.
John, far be it from me now to engage in lazy ageism here, but did it bring you back as well?
Well, it brought me back working again with Charlie. Like, as I mentioned, 50 years, it's some time, you know, 5 decades.
Yeah.
The fact that he had not changed in one sense, his enthusiasm, his relentless need to get the story, you know, was still there. And that was so refreshing and so enjoyable. And, you know, he was a very dear friend. And it was quite moving to know that this was going to be. And I had worked on his first documentary. This was going to be emphatically his last.
Do you suspect it helped you cope with what was happening to him as well, that you had this project together?
I think so. And I think that the bravery of Claire, his wife, was just fantastic. You know, it was, and she, you know, we felt for her. It was just, it was an experience that I treasure. I think Colin does as well.
Yeah, it's a real privilege, actually. Like, people ask, was it very difficult? Actually, it was kind of a gift because, you know, unless or until you have that in your family, you don't tend to accompany somebody on that kind of journey. And it's a real privilege to be there.
Well, listen, 9 p.m. tonight, Virgin Media 1. It'll be on the Virgin Media player as well. Ransom 79, Colin Murphy, John Kelleher. Gentlemen, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Kieran.
Thanks a million.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.